Welcome back. We're going to spend 2 hours now with an extraordinary and heroic American patriot, Cody Snodgrass. And let me start out by thanking again Ole Damegaard for making last night's program and tonight's by extension possible. Ole is a ferocious researcher, and when he brought Cody's name up to me, I immediately said, this has got to be given preferential treatment, and we got him on immediately. And last night, I think, is a rather legendary program. I will have it up in YouTube for you within the hour, and hopefully you'll be able to spread that around, and I mean all around the world. What we heard last night was nothing less than phenomenal. It was from a deep black ops contractor who has gone public. This man is bringing his truth forward so that all of us might learn from it, and that perhaps we might have a better chance at saving what's left of the United States of America, our great republic. We have been lied to and deceived as a matter of course, probably from the beginning. It's just the way government seemed to work. But nothing can compare to the way things have been run in the last 20, 30 years. And Cody has been in the middle of some of the darkest things that I'm imagining we can all imagine. I haven't pressed him on it. I haven't asked him about specifics. But we will talk tonight a little bit more perhaps about what happened in Oklahoma City at the Murrah Building. We're going to talk about Waco in more detail. We'll mention some Janet Reno stories. We're going to talk about the Clintons, of course, maybe their death list, the famous, infamous Clinton death list, Benghazi, and even more than that. So with that, let me welcome Cody Snodgrass back to the program. Hello, Cody. Thanks for being here again. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Jeff. It's great to be talking to an American audience. We've been doing interviews in the Netherlands and Ireland and Spain, but to your audience out there, all you guys, hello. Let's all stick together.
That's well, you know what the old expression, we either stick together or we hang separately, isn't that it? Something like that.
Yeah.
And believe me, they have no problem in terminating Americans who seemingly get in the way, in their way. What is it about the value of human life that gives the dark ones, the evil ones, such an advantage over those of us who treasure and appreciate life so much? They seem to be beyond psychopathic, Cody. I don't understand that kind of a mind. I think intellectually I can, but I certainly can't spiritually or emotionally understand it. It just doesn't work for me. They don't care about life.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Before we go any further, Jeff, I just want to make the standard disclaimer.
Please.
That we don't intend to violate any of the IIPA, the Intelligence Identities Protection Act here in the U.S. That's U.S. Code Title 50, Sections 421 and 426. So we're not going to disclose any, knowingly disclose any undercover operatives' names. The people that we talk about will either be dead or out of retired or whatever. So
yeah, out of the game.
I just wanted to say that because when it gets to Benghazi, the people I'm going to talk about shortly they're still active, so I cannot use their names.
That's fine, and thank you for making that clear as you did last night as well. And I'll again alert all of you as soon as the YouTube video is up and out. And I would urge all of you to make that a priority. Last night's program, truly unforgettable. And tonight will be much the same. Now, I did preface this first part of the program tonight with the idea that we are dealing with some kind of an unnatural consciousness that does not value life. How do these people, to the best of your ability, Cody, look upon the value of a human life? How do they process it mentally? What goes through their minds?
Yeah, it's a very cold, clinical. It's just like a general, you know, when someone says, "Sir, there's a division of NVA up on a hill," And then the general looks at it and says, all right, well, what's the estimated casualties if we take it? And, you know, they'll say, so many men. And then they go get coffee and say, okay, well, just do it, you know, and there's so many thousand people that are going to die. And then they go play golf or whatever they're doing. And it's like it's a distance. It's a seeing from a long way, that cold, clinical, icy, non-detached, non-human. And that's what I've found with in the Black Ops is people do get like that. There are some good people that really care, and like me, the patriotism overrode you know, money and all that other stuff.
Well, but that's why you turned down the offer to blow the Mura building.
Right.
You're a human being still. You're not disconnected.
Yeah, it's compassion. You know, if there's a spiritual light within you, you know, love, compassion, understanding, caring, forgiveness, unity, consciousness type of thing, that spiritual light is what separates us and normal good people from these monsters. And people like Bill and Hillary Clinton, myself, I never met them personally, but I had several times asked me, do you want to meet them? Some of the friends I worked with met them and all that. I never wanted to. I would always say, no, I don't want to be anywhere around them, because they have that it's almost like a satanic ability to detach.
Well, I think it is a satanic ability. I think you just put your finger on it.
Yeah, and they're very detached, but they can also smile and make you think you're the only person in the room, and that they really connect with you and they really love you. All that is giving to get something. Behind it is selfishness. Behind it is evil. Behind it is hatred for life.
Yeah. Look what they did in Haiti, for example. $7 billion went in there. Obama put the Clinton Foundation in charge of all the Haitian earthquake relief funds. And to this day, many people in Haiti would string the Clintons up if they had half a chance. Apparently, billions were looted from that money. A small number of residences, cheap little throw-ups, were put up, and that was it. The rest of the money's gone. So, yeah, these are not normal human beings. And one thing that they have that they wear like a badge of honor is, and we've seen it over and over and over again with Hillary Clinton, is this non-accountability. There is none for them.
Yeah. Yeah, and that Haiti, you know, a lot of people don't know it. They have a big CIA station there in Haiti. It's they run a lot of stuff through there. No one talks about it. I don't know if you heard this, Jeff. Maybe you can help me, the guy's name. This happened a couple of months ago, I think. There was a guy from Haiti who was an ambassador or someone on her staff down there, and he had been involved with some of that Clinton money laundering through the foundation, and he flew up to Miami to testify to a grand jury here recently. And then the day before he was scheduled to testify, he got to his motel room and then committed suicide.
Yeah.
Just before the testimony concerning money laundering in Haiti, because he was right there in the middle of it on the Clinton Foundation. And I can't remember the guy's name, but I remember seeing the thing. And I talked to Ole Domegard about it over there in Spain. And he said, did you hear about that? And he goes, yes, I did.
His name was Klaus... Klaus something, Eber something. Eber, let me look it up here.
Yes, yeah. That it was a strange name, but...
Klaus Ebervine.
Story, yes.
There it is.
Yeah, that story struck me because that's the same pattern over and over. There's, 121, 130 deaths. In the book I have, in this book, a list of some of the more... pertinent was Vince Foster.
Yeah.
We have a section on that. Seth Rich, you know, it goes on and on. I don't understand how in good conscience the government, people that are in the government, people in the Justice Department, can let this stuff go on. It's so obvious that they're murdering people to protect themselves while they're smiling to the American people's faces.
Right. Yeah.
And they're going to Haiti and saying, oh, we're here to help the children. I saw a picture of Clinton down there loading water down. This was so staged, the photo op. Haiti's a hot place, and there's a lot of humidity. And he was on the in a cargo door of a plane, and they had a stage crowd. It was all these women and children, and he's loading cases of water down to the poor, defenseless people. And
right.
You know, his sleeves are rolled up, and there's no, you know, no sweat, no nothing. They just staged the whole op, the picture, to make it look like he's helping the people. It's all such lies.
Well, their career is built on stage photo ops and stage. Life, period. They're gangsters is what they are, and it's not going to change. They're not going to change, and I often wonder if she's going to run again. I think if she were left to her own devices, she would. We'll have to wait and see. They've got so much dirt on so many people, Cody, and you'd know more about this than I, that they feel untouchable, and I wouldn't be surprised at all, frankly, if she runs again. That's what's called influence. And influence is defined by what you've got on people. And the Clintons have spent decades collecting dirt on very powerful people.
Yeah, J. Edgar Hoover did the same thing. That's one reason had the FBI, you know, that he was reined for so long.
Right. That's right. No, that's exactly right. Cody has a book out. It's going to be available on Amazon. We're not going to talk about trying to sell it tonight or make it available. I think that's best because once it's on Amazon, you'll all be able to get right to it. It's called Choosing the Light, Dark Secrets of the Oklahoma City Bombing. And it's much more than that, as you know by this point in time, but boy, did we open the door, thanks to Cody, on the OKC bombing. I never thought I'd live to hear what I heard last night. How, why, and the wherewithal. The whole story, now we know. And I urge you to watch clearly for this YouTube video. It'll be up shortly. This program tonight will be put up on a YouTube video tomorrow as well. These need to go around the world. Especially to anyone who cares about this country, and even those who don't. So you'll better understand the machinations of all governments. Virtually every government has dirt, runs on dirt, and knows dirt. None of them are really that much different, are they, Cody? They do the same things.
Yeah, and people say, well, you're bashing America. You know, no, I'm not. What we're doing is telling the truth. We're trying to bring the light of truth to these deceptions so that, because if we don't, you know, like Martin Luther King said, the day that we see truth and remain silent is the day we begin to die. We have to have some light. If we don't bring light and truth back into our country, back into America's soul, back into the government, if we don't do this now and rise together, we may never have another chance. We may slip off. I know people, Jeff, that were in Nazi Germany right when Hitler was rising up to power, and he was just again, and then they got their money and got out of there. And they're down in Santiago, Chile now. They got all their money out a long time ago. I know some of the paperclip guys from World War II at Los Alamos. I was with some of those. But they saw that, and they couldn't stop Hitler from rising to power. They knew what he was, but there wasn't enough of them that could stand up to make a difference. And then we all know, Jeff, what happened after that.
When you get a populace of any country that is so downtrodden and all of a sudden it finds a savior of some kind, they will rally to it. It's a political axiom. It's being human. And those Germans were so beaten up and crushed after World War I and the Treaty of Versailles, they were ready, and boy, did they come back together in a hurry. Hopefully the same thing might happen to this country. It's the end of the line. We're there now, Cody. As you know, you just stated it. It's really now or never. This is our last chance to do it.
Yeah, it's just like when Hitler used the same kind of false flag op, like the Mura building, blowing up the Mura building. It was burning down the Reichstag in 1933. And that was a false flag op.
Yeah, I don't know how many ops aren't false flag ops anymore.
Well, yeah, and then later on, right before the Nazis invaded Poland, they went to a radio station close to the Polish border, and they'd got some prisoners out and dressed them up in the appropriate uniforms and staged an attack on the radio station. And then they went to the German people and propagandized them and told them, I have this story in the book with all the dates and times. Uh-huh. They told them all, yeah, here's what happened. They attacked us. The Poles attacked us for no reason. For broadcasting the truth to the people. So, and then they invaded Poland. It was all lies, just like the Mura building, just like the Clinton.
And who came into the east half of Poland and ate that up, too? The Bolsheviks from the Soviet Union. It was all a deal. Okay, let's go now back to OKC, to the Mura building. Anything that we need to clean up there or rephrase or otherwise represent for our listeners tonight that we didn't get to last night?
Well, that's a great... We're going to summarize it real quick. That was a false flag op, okay? The building itself had been the repository of over 400,000 medical records of the Gulf War syndrome patients, all of our guys in the military and the women too. And then also, according to Craig Roberts, the Tulsa police detective, he got a tip from the FBI guy in Little Rock that all those files, for years they'd been investigating the Clintons down there. CIA had been running covert ops in MENA to arm the Nicaraguans and then bringing drugs back to pay for the ops. They couldn't get money from Congress to do it due to the Boland Amendment. And so the ABI, IRS, all those guys had been collecting records over years. They were all stored in the Little Rock FBI office, and it was just before the Mura building set, and they were moved over there. And then there were three bombs pre-wired in the Mura building. One of them only detonated. They were all set to detonate when McVeigh pulled the Ryder truck up there. Now, that was the cover. This was a black op, false flag, but it was going to be real public and messy. There's no way they could cover it up. They had to have a cover story, and the cover story was the Ryder truck. Well, two of the bombs didn't detonate, so now they had another cover up, and they had to first clean up the explosives and the undetonated ordnance, and then they had to go get the source, original reason why. They had to move those records, and that's what Ole Domegaard was talking about. They had another team of guys in blue suits. They were hurriedly put together because they weren't expecting to have to move those records. All that stuff was supposed to be destroyed. Right. Then they had to get a team together. Then they had, that's why they collapsed the perimeter. I mean, they pushed the perimeter out. There were firefighters and people in there trying to rescue people, and the feds pushed them all out and said, get out of here, pull back. And they said, why? We want to help the people. Well, they were having to move all those records that did not get destroyed out of there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want the people seeing what they were doing. And after they got the records out, then they let all the stuff go. So they deliberately let our people die. They deliberately put bombs in the daycare for the psyops to kill children. And if you remember, Jeff, they had that that famous Time magazine where that fireman's carrying the mangled baby out.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, that's a standard psyops. Mm-hmm. They blew that all over the news. They used media propaganda to cause emotional turmoil to the civilian target population It's a standard terrorist PSYOP technique. And that way, when you're all horrified, you know, it's horrible to see that. It does something to your mind. It disjoints it. It disconnects it. It triggers the cognitive dissonance threshold.
Exactly.
And your mind blanks out. It's horrible. It's terrible. And then this helps cover up. No one wants to investigate then because your mind's full of these bad emotions. It's horrible. And all you want to do is get away.
You don't want to look at it anymore. You don't want to look at it. The picture that you're talking about won a Pulitzer, by the way, as a classic news photograph. I think it won the picture of the year, Pulitzer Prize, for that particular photo. Fireman carrying a little baby out of the daycare. The other issue is after the building was blown. And I watched this, and you did too, and many of you listening remember this, how the media was used, and within literally a matter of a couple of days, the word patriot was turned into one of the most dirty words in the English language. They turned that word inside out. McVeigh, patriot. McVeigh, terrorist. They ran these words together, and it just... There were no patriots after that. That people went underground. They didn't use that term. That term was turned into dirt.
Yeah, and last night we talked about how I'd been offered that job, and then the decline. I was ready to get out of all that messy stuff. Turned it down, and then I went black after it happened, and went down there to our old safe houses that were used around the Centaur Rose Ops over in Arkansas, between Tulsa and Oklahoma City.
Uh-huh.
And I had a fake ID and disguise and everything. I thought they'd kill me. But what we did when I first got down there, right after that happened. We were watching the civilian newscast, the propaganda, as you're talking about. And every single story, Jeff, it started in the morning, and then the noon news, and then the five. Every single story started out. Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh. Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh. They were saying that over and over. This is before he was ever even indicted.
They didn't formally charge him even. Not yet.
Yes. And this was the propaganda tool used by the deep state on the civilians to get it in your head that he was the Oklahoma City bomber.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was part of the PSYOP, just like the baby. And you know, it's all terrible and horrible. But in the book, we have detailed eyewitness accounts of all kinds of things. There's just so much it's hard to get into in this short time. But the PSYOP was on. The cover-up was on. Yeah. This is a combination of media control, black operations, and shadow government chicanery to cover up one of the worst medical scandals and the worst crime syndicates in Arkansas with the Clintons and the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
This was a massive, massive cover-up on many levels.
When you listen to last night's program, you'll hear Cody talk all about what he just alluded to briefly. Gulf War illness, Gulf War syndrome, depleted uranium, what happened to our men and women when they came back home and tried to procreate, deformed babies, the passing of various radioactive issues. And then there was also Mycoplasma incognitus. That was another one that came out of there, in addition to the adjuvant we talked about. It's all on the program last night. So that's there. Now, what I'd like to do is move to Waco and talk about Janet Reno. That story has a lot of interest to this day. I still remember the ATF guys going into that second, I guess it was the second floor. They got up on the roof and crawled in that window. There were four or five that went in, and we learned shortly thereafter that two or three of them, or four of them maybe, were killed when they went in that window. Now, that raised red flags in my mind immediately. So what the hell? Why did they go in there, and why are they dead? So there are reasons, and we want to talk about that, and then about what was going on in the days up to the conflagration in which what was left of humanity at the Davidian compound was executed, murdered, annihilated. So tell us about the ATF agents who went into that window and several of them died. What happened there?
Well, yeah, when we were up in the middle of, in 1997, in the ATF DEA Operation Stingray, that's where I first met ATF agent Blake L. Butler. He was using a fake ID called Daniel Boyette. We nicknamed him Bo. But he had been at the Branch Davidian compound during the shootout. And we have proof of that because we went through some video footage and we found him. He was one of the guys, the agents on the stretcher that was carrying those guys that first went in the window you're talking about and that got shot. And we have some clear pictures of him. He was also at Ruby Ridge, Idaho. He was supposed to be at the Murr building the day it was bombed, but magically called in sick. So anyway, we had heard that a couple of those guys had been Bill Clinton's bodyguards, and they had recently been transferred over to ATF. And it just so happened that they were the first ones sent in that window. Now, it looks to me like this is a classic cover-up. You don't have to kill someone like the Clintons' machine does to murder the eyewitnesses to their crimes. But if you send them into a hot LZ, in a hot place where their risk of getting killed is much higher, you just let the situation kill them. And I think that's what happened. These two guys probably saw Bill Clinton. They were in a position to witness some of his sex crimes. And then they were immediately transferred away, sent into harm's way, the very first ones in the window, and then they got shot. And I think that's one of the ones we have a picture of Blake Butler carrying them out. So this is another cover-up in the middle of this. But I had a friend. He was an associate. His name is Captain Glenn Wilson. He's deceased now, so I can use his name.
Right.
Did two tours in Nam, and then he worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency on as a liaison. And I know, Jeff, you probably know a lot more about this than me, but in 1979, the Ayatollah Khomeini over in Iran had, with Islamic fundamentalism, overthrew the Shah of Iran. Mm-hmm. And they surrounded our embassy in Tehran and overran it. And Glenn Wilson was part of the DIA's war planning thing, a rescue team. I think it was Operation Condor, Operation Eagle Claw. I can't remember which one. It's in the book. But he was part of the planning thing to get that. And I had another guy in the Office of Naval Intelligence that was at the Iranian embassy when all that happened. But you fast forward through 79, and then Captain Wilson, when he got back from Nam, he had went down to Dade County, Florida, and got the job as No-Knock Narcotics. He was the head of No-Knock Narcotics. And back then, that was the big cocaine capital and all the stuff going on. And Janet Reno, at that time, was the district's attorney. And so my friend had coffee with her. They would go out and make busts and bring the evidence in, mostly cocaine, some heroin, to the DA. And he would sit and they'd go over the bus and all the stuff, the logistics that happened the night before. And he told me that on several occasions, Janet Reno went down into the evidence room where the drugs were they just brought in.
Uh-huh.
And he saw her take out cocaine, and mostly cocaine, but some heroin. And I said, well, why did she take evidence out? And he said, she was a lesbian and, you know, she was ugly. And the way she got her girls was to give them drugs. That's what he told me.
Mm-hmm.
And he also told me that on politically sensitive cases, people that were connected up, that she ordered them to destroy the evidence and lose it and forge the paperwork. So the cover-up machine that she would later do with the Clintons up in Washington as United States Attorney General regarding Waco was already in the works down there. And so Janet Reno was you know, just a cover-up artist, and very crooked and very dirty. And then she oversaw the Waco Branch Davidian fiasco. Now, Bill Clinton was calling the shots to her, and she was the front. Clinton didn't want the political blowback from a domestic op like that that could turn bad.
Sure.
And so he had Reno run in front for him. In case anything soured up, they'd throw her under the bus.
There are 13 Clinton bodyguards, at least, who died under various circumstances. That's an awfully high mortality rate. This is on the Clinton death list, which you can find online. They actually have the bodyguards separated out into a group. I remember after Waco, not long after, I've forgotten how many, was it one or two, fell out of a helicopter in an alleged training operation out over the Atlantic. Remember that one?
Yeah, I heard about that. It's classic. It's the classic deal.
Yeah, these guys are so dumb, they fell out of a helicopter. It just goes on and on. And then you fast forward to Seth Rich, another guy. Allegedly, he went to the hospital and was alive. Died 4 hours later in the hospital. They didn't succeed in killing him. On the street, apparently, and several of the reports have it that he did, in fact, get transported to the hospital and was alive for a while there. But yeah, I don't know. These stories are planted. You have to read about Operation Northwoods to understand how the agency, CIA, in fact, all the intel agencies, control the media. Operation Northwoods in the 60s, the CIA bragged it could plant any story it wanted in any major newspaper within an hour. I think you can find that very easily online. Look at that and read about Project Mockingbird. There's another one you want to look at to understand how the media is the servant of those who would seek to oppress and completely dominate us. And they're well on their way to succeeding. All right, so Janet Reno would help herself to the coke stash so she could get laid, so to speak. Well, why am I not surprised, okay?
Yeah, that's what Captain Wilson told me. I had, before he died, he had Agent Orange cancer, very bad, sad thing in his neck and throat from drinking that patty water over there and all. But he's a good friend of mine, and I did some secondary ops for him with the Defense Intelligence Agency and also personal ops. And he was a good man, but he told me all this stuff. I don't doubt his word at all. I mean, he was a good American. He just straight up told me the truth about her. And he said she's one of the dirtiest people. He said that she had that detached, satanic air to her that, I mean, she was like selfless, just but
right.
Evil.
Right. I think evil is the operative word here for many of these people. And think about Ron Brown, stepped across the line, became a liability, a word we've discussed last night with Cody at length. And they took a whole airplane of people down to get rid of Ron Brown. Don't forget about that one. Another Clinton death list, and they should put everybody who was on that plane, including the stewardess who survived and was extracted by a medevac helicopter, an American helicopter, but golly, by the time it landed, she had died of a severed femoral artery that they cut on the way. They killed everybody, and Ron Brown was found with a hole in the top of his head going down into his brain, so that's a rather unusual plane crash injury. They just don't care. You get in the way, you're gone. That's it.
Well, that's what we hope to change. Okay, because I used to be an operator, all right, and I trained in martial arts 20 years. I've had a lot of training, been a lot of ops. I'm here to tell everyone, the listeners, everyone out there in America, you know, these people, they have a lot of power, and they control the judicial. But I'm just here to tell them that we're not going to take this anymore. I'm not going to. I have roving bodyguards out here. They're driving around this in trucks. I have people out in the woods. I live in a very remote cabin, 4 feet to the national forest. We do have snipers out in the woods right now watching this place with night vision equipment. And if they try to come in here and stop me, they're going to have a problem. And we don't care who they are. What I'm saying is, Jeff, is that there are countermeasures. A lot of these people that were killed, like Seth Rich and them, Vince Foster, they were politicians and attorneys. They were not seasoned operators. They were not like Captain Wilson, combat veterans that know their way around this stuff. You look at the Clinton death list, and it's a lot of civilians and people that don't have training. It's time for us to rise up, prepare ourselves, learn these tricks of how they murder the witnesses and they control the narrative, and stop them.
Amen, Cody.
I'm not going to let them do that to me like they did to the rest of them. I went to my doctor before we started this and gave him a whole list. I said I signed a deal saying I'm not going to commit suicide. I'm not going to take any drugs. I have diabetes, so I take the drugs the doctor give me. That's all they're going to find if they do a toxicology report. I'm not going to go out and have a car wreck. I stay right here in the house. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard for them to get to me while I'm telling the truth like this. And I appreciate your show to get it out. But there's techniques we all can use to stop this satanic evil in our country.
May I mention one thing? I'm, first of all, very glad to hear, I'm not surprised, that you have taken more than adequate precautions while you're doing this program and others telling your story. Once it's out, it's out. And that'll give you a measure of safety, as we've discussed off air. You're a pro. They know that there's going to be real trouble if they try and mess with you now. This story is going to go all over the world, and it's going there right now as we speak, in fact. And
well, Jeff, if they offered me the job to bomb the Murrah building, okay, what do you think I'm capable of doing? Okay, I'm not going to be treated like those witnesses. I want Bill and Hillary Clinton to know their game is up. We will rise up. If Trump doesn't do it, it's going to get done another way. I had a chance, I'll say this over the air, I had a chance at one point with a 99% operational chance of success to kill both Bill and Hillary Clinton. I would put the operation, if I had have done it, at 99% success rate. At the conditions at the time, I didn't do it. But I'm just telling you that they are not invincible, and the same techniques that they've been using on all these witnesses and all the Jennifer Flowers and all the blackmail and Paula Jones and Monica Lewinsky, all the tricks they've done to hush these people up, that they're not going to work anymore. We're not going to let them. It's time to take them down. And I'm not the only one. I think that there's going to be a lot of things happen here real soon in our country, and I think there's going to be some justice done, hopefully. But I let them go that time, and they don't even know it, which is classic black op, just like the Murrah building. So we're not going to do it anymore. We're not taking it anymore. I'm not alone. I have a lot of people I know, and they are very tired. They're patriots of the United States, and they're really tired of this stuff they're pulling.
Wow. That's really music to my ears.
Well, I'm saying it over the air because it's true. Yeah, someone has to stand up to them. My uncle was at the Battle of Bulge in World War II, and he fought over there. Wow. My dad was at Pearl Harbor, and we have to fight. They had to fight the evil of Adolf Hitler. You can talk to him till you're blue in the face. They're psychopathic, satanic evil. You cannot talk to them. You cannot reason with them. You have to stop them with force, period. The Clintons are the same way. They will continue their writhing, sneaking little games and washing money through the Clinton Foundation and conducting blow-up ops for their records so nothing will ever, the Whitewater investigation will never make. They're going to keep this up and keep it up until someone stops them.
Accountability.
Everybody out there needs to get ready because this in our country, Jeff, there's a civil war brewing. I hope it never gets to that, but there's a battle between the light and the dark.
Yes, there is. You're 100% correct. It's been brewing for a long time. I think it may be actually closer than many listening would imagine it to be. It is time. We are at the end of the line. And to hear you say this gives a lot of people hope that there might at last be some real accountability.
Look at Hitler, Jeff. Look how long he reigned. And he seemed almost invincible while the Blitzkrieg was running through, and they were bombing. They took over France, and they were bombing. The Luftwaffe was bombing England. You know, Hitler seemed invincible at that point. The Clintons seemed invincible. You know, with Hillary being in Secretary of State and all the crap and Benghazi. Wait till you hear this story about Benghazi. It made me. When I heard this, it made me mad at what Hillary had done. It made me boil inside. And I got it straight out of the horse's mouth from a guy that was in a firefight at the embassy in Benghazi. The people need to hear this stuff.
All right, we're going to get there. Let me ask you one question, then I'm going to get back to a little bit more on Waco. When you see Hillary Clinton on television now, speaking and playing her little smiley game and she's articulate. The woman is a study. What do you feel when you see that woman, having just told us what you did, that you had him in your hands 99% had you wanted to do it? What do you think of when you see that woman?
Well, I know two people personally. They're both women. One was a CIA asset, and the other one was just a regular civilian. They both had sex with Hillary Clinton, and they talked to me and told me the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But when I see her, I see the makeup and the pretty smiling face, and underneath it, I see a satanic black witch. These two women that I talked to personally, I mean face to face, they had sex with her. They both told me that she was a witch. They said, both of them, that she was a fourth-degree coven witch. Now, I don't really know what that means because I don't know much about witchcraft, but she's very manipulative. Right. I've talked to some of the church groups, pastors. They say that she's coming around in people's dreams now with dreams of sex and stuff. And that's one of the satanic Illuminati tricks to manipulate people with sex. And so I think she's a witch. I think that she is satanic and extremely evil. When I tell you the story about Benghazi, I sense chills.
All right, we'll get there in a few minutes. I want to mention one other thing. Before she was Secretary of State, the word was she was flying out to Los Angeles about once a month to participate in some of the satanic Luciferian rites and rituals and events that are constantly staged in the liberal Hollywood elite echelon, shall we say. That wouldn't surprise you, would it?
Well, I have something to say. I don't, since we're on a civilian newscast, I'll just say it, and I'll try to use the right words, because I don't want to. But with this one person, one of the CIA person was Kathy O'Brien. You know, she wrote the book Transformation of America.
Right.
And I held her hand and was talking to her, doing a kind of a healing thing with her. But and she wrote about this in the book, but she also told me straight to my face. One time she was sent down to Arkansas, and she was a presidential sex slave model programmed in the Monarch and MKUltra CIA mind control programs. And Kathy O'Brien was really pretty. I thought she was a beautiful woman, but her mind had been messed up. Anyway, she would sit down there to have sex with Bill. And her story was that Bill got done with her, and then there was a woman's house that they were using. And so Clinton could come in and out the back door. And this woman then called Hillary and had said, hey, come on over, and handed the phone to Bill. And he said, yeah, come on. This is a good one. And so Hillary came over there. And they had Kathy there in bed. And on the inside of her labia, you know, on the right side, you know, in her vagina, they had put a mark. It's a goat's head. It's a satanic symbol.
And right.
They had put like a tattoo in there. And when Hillary Clinton got down there to do her business, she saw that and got wildly excited because of this death, this devil's worship symbol there. And she goes, "Oh my God, I love this." You know, and that's the story that Kathy O'Brien told. So she's satanic. They worship the Bohemian Grove, you know, the pentagrams, they cut the cat's throat and the blood and the whole thing. She is a witch. They are evil. They will kill and step over anybody for power and control. That's what the dark side wants, is power and control.
And there's no
people.
Such thing as too much power or too much control. Now, we also want to tie in Pizzagate to this. It's all part of the same thing. The International Pedophile Network is not extraneous from the government. It is part of the governing process, sad to say. What can you add to that?
Well, it's more part of the dominance and power. You know, if you have power over somebody sexually, that gives you a thrill. But if it's over a defenseless, innocent children, that's even more. You have the fear and the power. They feed emotionally, okay, off of fear and domination and power over others. That's why they naturally migrate to positions like Secretary of State or the President. These people are evil, satanic beings. Their spirits are of the dark polarity, and they love children. They love controlling them, and they love the whole thing.
I don't know how many pictures there are of George W. Bush with bald-headed men kissing them on top of their heads and hugging them. I think there are 10 or 12 of them out there. These people are not normal. And the sad thing is, the average rank-and-file American who gets his or her, quote, news from the mainstream media is getting no news except propaganda and mind control. It's all imagery. It's all projected. It's all carefully contrived. All of
it.
And nothing is left to chance. Nothing.
Right. And in the, I'm sorry to interrupt. In the black, there's a little delay here, but in the black ops community, we got to see, I didn't see everything, of course, but I got to see things from the ground that, you know, they figure you're one of them, just like those bodyguards at Waco.
Right.
They figure you're one of them and loyal to them, so they don't have to hide their true selves around you. So we got to see a lot of stuff like that. The people out here, all they see is staged photo ops, like that thing in Haiti with Clinton loading and helping the people. It's all staged. There's makeup. It's fake. The whole thing is fake. They hide behind the offices of the presidency or Secretary of State or whatever. They hide behind the light. They hide behind the truth, and then they conduct their slithery, satanic stuff. And we're here to expose them about the Mur building. I personally believe, although I do not have actionable intelligence, okay, it's my own personal opinion and belief that Bill and Hillary Clinton were directly involved in the bombing of the Mur building and in its subsequent cover-up, because If that investigation's ever reopened, and the operators and people that helped remove those records when the two bombs failed to detonate, those were operators like me. Those were black ops people sworn to secrecy. They probably had to sign point-specific national security oaths for that op. They might have been contractors from overseas. But those people there saw that. They were in the middle. I'm asking you guys to step forward now, please, wherever you are, and help bring the truth like I am. Step over your fear of death. You know, my fear of death is only surpassed by my love of freedom and truth.
Very eloquently stated. I remember after the Mur building bombing, and I wondered at the time, if the other bombs didn't go off, was somebody going to hang for that? That's a pretty big screw-up, isn't it?
Well, yeah. If I took that job to bomb that building, I guarantee you those wouldn't have went off. Whoever did that was not a professional. Whatever happened on a op like that, especially a domestic op.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go overseas, you've got a little fudge factor. You can lay it off on the Shining Path or Al Qaeda. You can mess up ops, and you have more cover, to leeway. Here in a domestic op like that, everything had to be precise. Everything, and they screwed it up. So whatever happened there was non-professional.
Now, I remember General Ben Parton.
He's deceased
now. General Parton was one of the first people to come out and say that that was just total crap about the Chuck bomb. And I think he was one of the ones who first pointed to the seismology readouts showing several explosions there in quick succession. At least two. Boom, boom.
Yeah, when I was in Amoco for my civilian front, I was a petroleum geophysicist and then a research geophysicist. I had about 19 guys, people under me.
Right.
That was my front. But we did seismology. And so I'm an expert in that. And I looked at the seismology reports from the University of Oklahoma there, the geological deal. And the waveforms show two distinct waveforms. What
Correct.
That meant
yeah.
was when an explosion goes off, there's a compression wave. It's generally a longitudinal wave. That's a wave where the direction of energy is exactly the same as the direction of motion of the wave, okay? And so those were two forms like that, but one of them had the sharp frequency characteristics of C4, because it makes a certain waveform when it detonates.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was a much slower, longer frequency, which was the ammonium nitrate and diesel. That's a big push. It's like someone putting their hand on your chest and just kind of gently pushing you. And then the C4 detonation is like someone taking a ice pick and just poking you real fast.
Got it.
And so there was proof that there was two forms. Another thing that happened was they got residue samples. See, when C4 blows at 26,000 feet per second, that's its detonation rate, mm-hmm. it leaves a residue with the RDX, and you can scrape it off things later. They sent that to the FBI lab, and the guy that was running the FBI lab in D.C., he was the head guy. He said, I got his name in the book. He said, this is the biggest terrorism case in U.S. history. I want to do this forensic analysis personally to make sure the truth is there. Well, you know, the government's cover story, Jeff, was that ammonium nitrate and diesel and the lone McVeigh thing, that was the cover. Well, they had to maintain that. But guess what they found on the residue samples sent to the forensic labs to the FBI? They found C4 over and over again. When McVeigh was first arrested,
mm-hmm.
they took his clothes and bagged them. They sent those clothes to this FBI lab. They found C4 residue and ammonium nitrate both. That fits with the two signatures from the seismographs. There were two different bombs. One inside the building went, one in the truck, and the other two didn't explode. And guess what happened to the guy that ran those tests? They ordered him to doctor his reports and only put the ammonium nitrate as the explosive.
Uh-huh.
And so they fired him because he wouldn't go along, and then he went to Congress to blow the whistle, and they had sealed hearings where he told them there was C4 in there. There was C4, and they sealed all those hearings because it didn't fit the cover story that McVeigh was the lone bomber.
Yeah.
I mean, I this book's full of details like that. A lot of people don't know this stuff, but I'm a explosives expert. I could talk for days about all of this stuff. It's General Parton was right. It was a massive, massive cover-up from top to bottom.
All right. Hold on. I have to take a break for about 3-4 minutes. We'll come right back with Cody as we continue. Another hour to go. And stand by. It's only going to get to be more incredible. Okay, let's get right back to it. Cody and I and all of you good people, wherever you are around the world, you people, in almost every instance, are the difference. You're what's left. You care. You're not one of the sheep with your smartphone plastered up against your head trying to initiate a brain tumor, you care. And that's no joke. Here's the story. You take this information and you change your life and you endeavor to make a difference. You endeavor to persevere along those lines. We have no choice. And I don't want to get into the Muslim immigration issue. We've seen what's happened to Europe. The same thing is scheduled to happen here. You've got to stand up and oppose the things that are anti-American and designed to destroy what's left of our republic. And that's what Cody is doing, and I couldn't salute him any more highly. And I hope all of you will go. The video from last night, don't go now, but it's up. It's up at the top of my channel. After this is over, if you didn't hear last night, even if you did, go take another listen and please pass it around. And this has nothing to do with monetization. I'm talking about information here. That's what we need to do. Now, if we can, Cody, just three or four more minutes on Waco, and then let's move to Benghazi after that. Those people at Waco, many were already dead. The public didn't know it. And as we talked about last night, there were, I guess, Hueys overhead every night firing into the building. People were dying. And at the end, when they were incinerated, there were a lot of dead people in that building already. Tell us a little roundup and a wrap-up of Waco, and then we'll go to Benghazi.
Okay. I knew a guy named Ron Cole. He was a Branch Davidian. I'm not a Branch Davidian, but he was. Mm-hmm. And he was very close to David Koresh. And the day before the compound was hit, he had flown down. It was 2 days before it was hit. His mother was sick in Florida, and he flew down there to take care of her. And then the next day, the compound was hit by the feds. And there was a shootout. And so he saw it on the news right when it happened, and he called before the feds cut the phone lines. And he talked directly to David Koresh. And Koresh had just been shot in the shootout. And so this is what Ron Cole told me straight to my face, okay? And I don't think he has any reason to lie or make any of it up.
Okay.
So Ron told me that Koresh told him that the ATF pulled up in front in trucks with big, long cattle trailers, and that the Branch Davidian dogs at the compound, they were unmarked. No one said a word. The dogs just ran out and started barking at the trucks. And the ATF agents shot the dogs and then started shooting at the thing. And so there was evidence to support this later on. Mm-hmm. But that Koresh got hit. And then later on, the feds cut the phone lines. And then they set the perimeter up so they could conduct their business. Well,
right.
He flew back immediately, and by that time the feds had the perimeter around the compound, and many of the Branch Davidians that were out shopping that day or went to Waco for things, they came back, but they weren't allowed in. So
no,
they got camps, and they watched. And at night they saw the black Hueys. They were unmarked, no lights, and they kept seeing streaks coming down, you know, the orange or green. And so they didn't know what it was. They were all civilians. They're not used to night ops. And one night they said, hey, I wish we had some night vision. And some guy came walking up and gave him some military night vision so they could watch it all. And then McVeigh, it was actually Timothy McVeigh there. And he explained, yeah, he was just back from Desert Storm in 1991, and he had come down there. And what he explained to him was, he said, look, I just got back from Desert Storm. I won a Bronze Star. I'm a tank commander. This is a standard technique, Delta Force technique, when you have insurgents hold up in a building, and there's the snipers and shooters always go to the top because they can shoot further. But you deny the top ground, and you push them down to the lower levels so that your perimeter team surrounding them on the outside can collapse the perimeter and get closer. That way they can use small arms like grenades and so forth that they couldn't use from a further away position.
Got it.
So they all watch this in horror. Night after night, according to Ron Cole, these Hueys came in the dark at night, and all they saw was the choppers and the streets. And they machine gunned that compound completely up. They murdered most of the Branch Davidians in there. They all had, by that time, had gone down to the lower floors. And then the tanks were called. Ann Richardson was lied to the governor, and they went and got tanks off of the Fort Hood base. That's where my dad took his basic training for Pearl Harbor.
I'll be done.
Fort Hood, yeah, they got the tanks, and they waited 50 days or so.
Mm-hmm.
The original siege began February 28th on 93, and it ended April 19th, 1993. Now, what's that date, April 19th? Same date the Murrah building was bombed.
Well, okay, no coincidences, ladies. We've said this so many times over the 24 years on this program. There are no coincidences. Not like that.
Yeah, and so there were 54 dead, including 21 children dead. But what had happened, here's the bottom line. The shadow government machine gunned those people. They were down. Most of them were dead by the time this happened. The feds waited for the windiest day. I mean, the wind was absolutely horrible that day. They went to the windward side. They interjected some gas in a flammable thing, and they burnt that compound down to cover up the murders of American women and children. Okay, that's what really happened. Then Ron Cole, when they saw, the Branch Davidians saw that, this is what he told me. He said, we got scared shitless. We got so scared
mm-hmm.
that they were going to come get us next.
Mm-hmm.
So they all disappeared. They left out of there, and they came up here to Colorado,
mm-hmm.
and they rented a ranch. This stuff's never been out into public before, and I thank you for your platform to get this truth out. He said they rented a little ranch way out in the mountains, and they were trying to buy some illegal automatic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
I had the largest machine gun shop here in the state of Colorado previously.
Mm-hmm.
I did not meet Ron Brown or find out about it, but he picked up some MP5 machine guns illegally to protect themselves because their buddies had all just been murdered and killed
yeah.
down there. And
not Ron
really
Brown.
Happened.
What was his name again to get that straight?
I mean, Ron Cole. I'm
there
sorry,
you go.
Ron Cole.
It's all right. I want to make sure we got it right. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. All right, so what he told me next is this. They were all laying low in this little place they'd rented,
mm-hmm.
and somehow the feds found out where they were. And he said that one night a team came in with black, all in black, and he had went out in the woods. They had some stuff stashed in the woods, and he went out to get it, and it was his blind luck. That's when the team hit. And he said they went in there and murdered several of the Branch Davidians that had run away after Waco. And he got scared, and he just ran in the woods, and he threw his gun down and just went off on his own to hide. So he got a fake passport, and he went up to Canada.
Huh.
It was an Algerian passport. This is what he told me.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was fixing to go to Algiers the next day. He was going to disappear, you know, change his identity, change everything, and just fade away. He was lucky to be alive. He made one mistake, and his girlfriend down in Waco, he had to leave her in a hurry, and he was sad, and he knew he'd never come back to the United States, and he loved her, and he just wanted to tell her goodbye. So he called her cell phone. The next night, the next day, he was scheduled to leave, to fly out. The FBI and the RCMP, that's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police,
mm-hmm.
Hit his place, and they arrested him and extradited him back to the U.S., and they threw him in the pod at the FCI Correctional Institute where I was,
mm-hmm.
and they threw him in there. I had been planted with evidence by this Blake Butler cop who was at Waco. We got pictures of him. He planted me with evidence to shut me up about all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ron Cole came right in our pod. And I had a bunch of stuff about the Waco stuff that had been mailed in to me. And he saw it on the table. And he said, are you interested in that? And we started talking. He told me this stuff straight to my face.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got him on a running away, and then planted a machine gun charge on him, and I don't know where he went after that. But he was scared to death inside that maximum security prison. He kept telling me, they killed my friends. I watched them murder them with the helicopter, and I know they're going to kill me. They're going to poison my food. He was just really paranoid. And I thought he was a little mentally unbalanced at first, but once I heard his story, Jeff, he certainly had the right to be paranoid.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's the story he told me. It's never been out in public.
That's amazing. They hunted those people down and killed them.
They were witnesses. Look what the Clintons do to the witnesses. What do they do? They hunt them down and kill them.
Yep. I started this program in 94. And I remember then one of the earliest things I was reporting on was the Clinton death list. And it seemingly has never stopped. How about the black guy, last year, allegedly lifting a barbell and it fell and crushed his throat? First they said he had a heart attack, but that wouldn't work with a crushed throat. So then they had to say, no, he dropped a barbell on himself. This is another person who used to work with the Clintons. It just goes on and on and on. You can all look it up online if you want and read about it. Just enter Clinton death list. And it's probably a hell of a lot bigger than I'll ever know. And Cody has a much better idea of this than I do.
Jeff, I could do a 2-hour show easily just in Arkansas.
Let's put that on the ledger. I'd like to have you on as often as you want to come on and get as much of your life out there for the record as we can. This is truth time, America. We don't have time to play games anymore. It's now or never. No joke. The technology they have arrayed against us is unbelievable and far down the road from what you'd imagine, unless you listen to this program all the time. Let's go to Benghazi.
Are you sure you want to go there?
I want to go there. This is something that needs to be done. And all of you listening, you're going to hear the real truth for the first time about Benghazi. No more lies. No more bullshit. This is the real deal. Please, go ahead.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to tell you is what was whispered into my ear. This individual put his lips to my ear. He didn't want his lips red or anything else. He was a Marine Corps, in the Marine Corps for a long time, many years, and then worked a little while with Eric Prince's company, the Blackwater, as a contractor, because you make a lot more money contracting. You know, I made $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a day sometimes, depending on what we were doing.
Right.
But anyway, it's high risk. You know, people go, oh, that's a lot of money. Well, it's high risk. You can get killed, and a dead man doesn't care about money. But he had went over to Benghazi and had become a CIA contractor, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he was there to provide support, operational stuff around that embassy. And here's the story he told me. I cannot use his name. I know everything. I'm not going to use his name public. But
please don't.
Anyway, so Jeff, here's what he told me. He said when that firefight broke out, he was sitting in his quarters, and they had radios and everything, and they heard that there'd been a explosion and firefight. And he got his gear all ready and got his web gear on, was ready to go. And then the order came to stand down. And then they heard that there were air assets ready to help and assist our embassy personnel, and they were ordered to stand down. And this process went, and then he'd listen and listen on the radio. It got worse and worse. And then he'd want to go. They'd call in to request to go assist. They'd stand down. So this happened 3 times. And he told me, he said, you know, I'm a Marine. I took the oath to defend the Constitution, and I sat there and listened to all this stuff on the radio. And he said, I could not in good conscience let our men and people be killed. And so I said, you know, Blackwater be damned and CIA be damned. And he knew he was going to lose his job. And he went running. And he got in a firefight for about 7 hours. And he saw some of those Navy SEALs that got shot. He saw them die, and he told me they blew off the roof of the building with Soviet mortars, and just See, this goes back to Waco. You know how you blow off the top floors first?
Right.
But you can collapse the perimeter. See, this is a standard tactic. Now, before we go any further, here's another thing that he told me. He said that when we went in and we hit Gaddafi in Libya, in Tripoli, that Gaddafi had big stores of gold bullion. He also had a lot of Soviet arms that he'd been buying. He was washing his oil money, oil revenues, with the Soviets, and they were trading him arms and gold. And I had a friend that's another associate. I cannot use his name. He had dinner with Gaddafi in the National Palace one time. And so he told me a lot of stuff about this. But so I got two sources on the ground right there. So anyway, Obama and Clinton, they both looted the gold. Not personally. They had their teams do it, black ops teams.
Right.
They looted the gold. Then they were taking the arms and funneling them through that embassy, and they were arming ISIS over in Syria.
Uh-huh.
So the people over in Syria, you know, ISIS was butchering people, cutting their heads off, blowing up the old ruins, you know, and all of the stuff, and it pissed all the people off. That's why they attacked our embassy. They were tired of us running guns to these people who were looting and raping their country.
Huh.
So at the night, they did all that. Our Navy SEALs got killed. The ambassador got killed. Meanwhile, all our air assets, all the help, were ordered down by the State Department because Hillary Clinton and Obama didn't want the American people to find out that they were secretly arming ISIS. ISIS was a creation of our own government, and then also looting the gold for themselves. So here, Clinton and Obama are getting rich. They're getting rich off the gold
while
our men and embassy personnel are dying. That's what he told me.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff, this is gonna be a shock to your audience. It was a shock to me when I heard all this. And I told him, I turned around and whispered in his ear, I said, "Are you kidding me?" He said, "No, that's what happened." He said, "I know some guys that were moving that gold and stuff, but I never handled it myself. It's all hush hush." And if this story is true, okay, if it is true, because I don't have any actual intelligence to verify.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why he would lie to me. If this story is true, that means Obama, President Obama, and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton were both engaged in a conspiracy to commit treason against the United States of America and the Constitution of the United States. It means they were both involved in a treason, in a conspiracy to commit treason by letting our men die, by holding back deliberately assets that may have led to them all being alive. And he was disgusted, and he told me, he says, I'm not supposed to say her name because he signed a non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah.
A point-specific, mission-specific agreement not to talk about that, so he couldn't go out in public. But he could tell somebody like me, and now I'm out in public telling it. But he said she, and I knew he meant Hillary Clinton, but he didn't use her name. He goes, "I can't use her name." He said, "She is one lying bitch." That's exactly what he said to me. I don't like cussing on the air, Jeff. I'm sorry about your show, but this is the truth. This is what he said.
Now, these people are the smartest audience in talk radio. They're fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Amazing.
One
quick thing, Cody.
Yeah.
They used to talk about the Clintons being mega millionaires. And I used to tell people, no, they're billionaires.
Well, yeah, they wash drug money. Down in Centaur Rose in Arkansas, I was told by my higher-ups that there was about $100 million a month in cocaine going through there, and that Bill Clinton was getting $10 million a month as part of that black op. His job was to use the position as governor to cover up all those ops.
Right, right. Yeah. And how much of the $7 billion out of Haiti did they get? You know damn well it was a pretty good chunk of it. I forget, what was the kid's name who wrote the book about Mina?
Terry Reed?
I think it was Reed.
Yeah, Terry Reed was ex-AFI, Air Force Intelligence from Vietnam, and he wrote that book called Compromise.
That's it. I used to have Terry on the program. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, years ago. Yep. Very interesting, to put it mildly. Okay, go ahead. You're moving on. This is fascinating.
Yeah, there was one more thing that I wanted to tell that they were talking about.
This is bad as the USS Liberty, you know. Johnson stand down on that?
Well, yeah, that's the USS Liberty and the USS Turner join the Gulf of Tonkin. Now, I have eyewitnesses over there that were there. They were on the USS Warden. That was a guided missile destroyer, you know, with the running cover for the Enterprise. They were running air support missions in the highlands of Vietnam. But that's a whole other story. We'll talk about that later. Back to Benghazi. Okay, so my source said that they had, you know, they watched civilian news once in a while, and that the wing camera footage of what they were showing us Americans over here on our media, Obama and Hillary Clinton were keeping up the farce that ISIS was our enemy, and we're trying to stop them. And Obama ordered, ISIS convoys to be attacked and all this stuff. The whole time, our guys were flying off aircraft carriers with missions in the area, and they had those big, long, 100-long Toyota trucks, you know, and they would have clear visibility. Mm-hmm. There was no jungle canopy like Vietnam. There was no dust storms. They could see for miles, and they would get up close to hit an ISIS target and then call in for the green light to proceed with ordnance delivery and in order to stand down. Then they would come back to the carrier and standard procedure, drop the ordinance before you land, you know, to stop crashes and stuff. And then they were ordered to sign national security agreements not to talk about it. And then what they did over here in our country was take the Russian wing stuff, the footage, and substitute it for ours and then show the American people that we were hitting on.
Unreal. Unreal. It's all treachery. It's all trickery. It's all deceit. It's lies.
And they're looting the gold. They're looting the gold while our guys are doing all the dirty work.
Yeah. This is beyond despicable. I don't even have words for it. I don't. I think of that grinning Obama, and, you know, you just want to punch his lights out. He's such a disgusting human being. All the stories.
Well, this is how the shadow government works.
That's it.
And the Americans, we're all over here working and paying our bills and taking care of our children and living good lives, trying to be good people. And these people at the top are totally, it's just, what do I say, Jeff? What do we say?
I don't know. We run out of words. Literally, I've run out of words many times. How do you explain something and we don't have the proper words for it? They've been used to death. These people are just as you said earlier. They are inhuman, Luciferian, satanic. They are not like we are. They're a different mindset. They have absolutely no morality, no spirituality. And I'm not to the point here where I'm willing to I will not willingly rule out anything anymore as far as cause. I think that there's a possibility, and this may sound a little bit outlandish to you, Cody, I don't know, that there may be some kind of off-planet evil involved here. Something's wrong at the top. It's beyond human behavior. It's that evil. It just seems like there's something going on that doesn't normally register. I don't know, but it's that bad.
Well, we're definitely not alone in this great vast universe. I mean, if the Earth was the only
what a joke that would be, huh?
Yeah. I mean, so you may have been hitting on something, and that's another subject.
Yeah, well, we'll maybe talk about that, too. I've been studying that very closely for over 30 years.
Well, I flew the space shuttle simulator at NASA down there, the one the actual astronauts trained on. I was in the simulator, and I got a lot of contacts and stuff about that.
Well, I'd love to talk to you about that sometime, too. Clark McClellan is a very good friend of mine in this program. He was a space shuttle scientist down there for 32 years. He got to know the paperclip people. He learned a lot. He saw things during shuttle missions he shouldn't have and talked about them, and they bounced his butt out. He got no pension. He's got nothing. He's living in Florida now, lost one leg to diabetes, and we try to help Clark. He's been a friend for a long time. So, yes, I'd like to talk to you about that at some point, too. Okay. Benghazi. No accountability. Nobody pays the price except the dead. Hillary goes on to be presidential candidate. You must just about retch at some of this stuff you see during the campaign.
I was offered the job to bomb the Murrah building. I turned it down on patriotic grounds. They planted me with evidence. They threw me in prison for something I did not do. The judge, Nottingham, was appointed by Director of Central Intelligence, George Bush. The prosecuting U.S. attorney was Tom Strickland, appointed by Bill Clinton.
Uh-huh.
And then later, after my case, after all this happened, Judge Edward Nottingham in the Tenth Circuit got busted with a sex scandal with prostitutes. In my book, I have all the newspaper articles from the Denver Post, Rocky Mountain News. This federal judge was caught in a sex ring. He was using his computer in the back chambers of the court and uh-huh. using his own credit card to order up all kinds of sex stuff. And, I had talked about Kathy O'Brien and the Clintons and Bush and the pedophile thing, and then I went in there, they buried all that, they took the tapes, mm-hmm. they broke every law there was, and then they stuck me in front of a judge who got later busted on a sex ring with prostitutes, mm-hmm. and this federal judge is one sex guy covering up for another sex guy. This book.
Where does it end? I don't know. You did. And thank God you're still alive to tell it. You remember the other judge they found? He had a vacuum pump or some sex toy under his robes while he's sitting at the damn bench in the court. It's true.
I know, it's just, when you start like this, Jeff, all you can do is laugh, because the poor American people that are trying to do their best, they're being duped and played so badly, it breaks my heart. I don't know what to do but laugh or cry. What are you going to do?
I don't know. I ran a story today, the millennials 18 to 36 or thereabout are now the dominant voting bloc in America. And they're registered 2-1 as Democrats. They don't like the existing gun laws. They want to tighten them up. We got problems, ladies and gentlemen. The only thing keeping this country as free as it is our Second Amendment. Our First Amendment's in grave jeopardy. If the Second is gone, we're gone. Every single country in the history of, modern times, modern history, that has had a disarmed public, it's over for them. We're gone. So we better fight. And I've told people for years, Cody, I said, look, even if you don't want to own a gun, go get your concealed permit. Let the damn government know at least that you're applying and you care about the Second Amendment. Just get that permit. Anyhow, I don't know. We if we don't take care of ourselves, as you've been saying, you're not going to be able to dial 911 on the phone and get anybody to come out and help you. It's getting worse all the time. All right, where do you want to go from here? We got so many areas to go.
How much time do we have?
We got about 20 plus minutes.
Okay, well, what I'd like to do here for the listening audience, Pearl Harbor is coming up, the
yes.
anniversary on December 7th. And my book here, I've dedicated to my stepfather, Sergeant Jimmy Howard. He's born in 1917, and he died on May 26, 2003. But in 1937, this is for all the Pearl Harbor guys and the families mm-hmm. and all of our veterans and stuff. Mm-hmm. This guy, you know, Jimmy, he went in May of 37. I'll give a brief history. He enlisted in the U.S. Army, went down to Fort Hood, Texas, took his basic, and then he went to Pacific Command. And was assigned to Schofield Barracks, Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, wow. on December 7th, 1941. Mm-hmm. He was in the 25th Infantry Division, and he survived that attack that day. And he's got several stories he told me directly to my mouth. We recorded some of them as he got older, mm-hmm. because a lot of the Pearl Harbor vets, Jeff, they were all dying off, you know, and we mm-hmm. wanted to have some kind of record, you know, of these.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This is right out of some guy's mouth. It's not some doctored Pentagon report. It's not some media outlet that twisted things up. So anyway, Jimmy then went to the Great Battle at Guadalcanal. I believe that was November of 42. The Marines had been in there first, and then the Army came in later to mop up. But he got malaria fever, and he told a bunch of stories about that. Then he got out, and he came back to the States and survived and spent 32 years in the Missouri Highway Patrol. So he was a man that gave 40 years of service to our country. And when Jimmy died in 2003, we went up to Camdenton, Missouri, where the funeral was. And this is a heck of a story. I've told this at veterans rallies, and I told it to VFW Post 11411 here in the area. And it's a moving story. But they had the funeral, and the whole side of the pews were all ringed off for the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association. Mm-hmm. People came from all around the country. And there was the president, national president of Pearl Harbor Survivors Association. So they did a service, and he was the first one to go to the casket. And then he turned around and walked over to me. I was sitting on the very front row at the very first chair, and I was holding my mother's hand. And then we had all the family there. And he walked over to me, and he said, he leaned down and stuck his hand out to shake my hand, and he said, "I'm sorry, son." And I apologize if I get a little emotional about this, Jeff. But
it's all right. Don't worry about it.
I was very sad. Jimmy was a big thing in my life. He taught me a lot of things. And I don't like people seeing me cry. So I got up, and I kind of ran outside.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left the church, there was a big, long canopy, a big church. And down at the end of it, going into the parking lot, there was a truck blocking the way with the motor running. And I immediately thought it was a hit. I thought the CIA was going to kill me there. You know, family funeral. They got me at a time and a place.
Wow.
I hid in the bushes a minute. Mm-hmm. And then I got out, and I walked over to the truck, and there was an old man slumped over the passenger dashboard. And I tapped on the window. And he rolled it down and sat back. And his right ear was gone. He had no hair. He had all this white scar tissue badly burned all over his head, and he was on oxygen. And I said, "Sir, are you sick? Are you hurt? What's going on?" I said, "There's a funeral, and everybody's coming out, and you got to move this truck." And he said, "Those goddamn doctors at the VA." And I said, What are you talking about?" And he said, "Well, they told me I was too sick to come here today." He said, "Now I can't walk, but my buddies got me out. And they put me in this truck and parked it here. And I got as close to one of my brothers as I could." And he had got burned up at Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
Horribly disfigured. And I felt that bond, that soldier's bond between those men. And I started crying. I took his hand. And me and that old man sat there and cried like babies. And I lost Jimmy. And he was remembering all the stuff from the war.
Yeah.
And I never saw him since. I never seen him. I didn't know his name. And so after the funeral, we went to have the 21-gun salute. There's 200 cars. I drove Jimmy's van. He had his badge number from the Missouri Highway Patrol, 208. They had everything blocked, you know, cops everywhere, full-color guard. And after they did the 21-gun salute, The national president of Pearl Harbor Association got down on his hands and knees. He picked up all the brass. And then he walked over to me. They gave my mother the flag, and he said, "Here, son." And I said, "What is this? What's this for?" And he pointed to all the little kids and grandkids running around. And he said, "Son, did Jimmy tell you the stories from Pearl Harbor?" And I said, "Yes, sir, he did, several times." And he pointed at those kids, and he says, "Now, these kids are too young to know." He said, "But you give this brass, you give some of that brass to them when they get older, and you tell them what these men did for our country. You tell them how they suffered and how they died." And I started crying again. And so I got home. I went back home, and I wrote this poem here for these men. I was very emotional. But I'd like to read it. It's short. But it's called "We Loved Our Country," and it's what this book is dedicated to.
Please do. Please.
Okay. "As our veterans who have gone before us have carried burdens for too long down deep inside their souls, we must stand up with them, united as one people. Afraid we are, for we know war's path, which many before us have trod. Courage under fire, we pray, comes upon us from mighty angels, bringing light into our hearts to face death once more. If we survive, us who ride the storm, a healing we will need after the years go by. By telling our truth, a soldier's bond, seeking someone to hear, to really care. We loved our country. Sacrifices of good men before us made. God bless our country, our mother's soul, for whom we fought, bled, and paid. Memories of my brothers falling. Blind luck, the only reason I'm still alive. You won't be forgotten in the silence of our hearts. Although most civilians won't ever hear your cries. Tears for my men. God grant them peace. My soul can't stand much more. Only angels' love may one day bring us healing from the battle's haunting roar."
Cody, that's just, I don't have words for that. That's beyond.
I watched our men go too.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have really bad dreams and PTSD, and I drank heavily.
Mm-hmm.
I would drink Jack Daniels and just try to blot it all out of my mind. So I apologize for my for my emotions, but
Cody, you don't need to apologize at all. Please,
I just seen the Pearl Harbor thing and all this, and I was that bond of the men after 60 years, and it brought this up, and I wrote this poem, and I dedicated this book to our soldiers and to our firefighters, those poor guys up there, the first responders at 9/11, Jeff. You know, they breathe all that asbestos.
I know.
They're all sick. These people are in the VA hospitals from Agent Orange. You've got all that Gulf War syndrome. These poor guys have been... And they suffer in silence. I see them in the VA hospitals.
They don't.
We
they don't
do healings on them, and we don't charge money. But this was motivated for, this is our country. These are the men and that helped fight our country, not mealy-mouthed, lying, weasel politicians like the Clintons.
Scum.
These are the backbone of America, these men like this.
Right. These are the ones that made their criminality possible. That's the irony of it. With their sacrifice, and it's so wrong. It doesn't get any more wrong than that. That was Cody, that's just an extraordinary experience. Thank you for sharing that, and thank you for writing it. And so many of these men, you're right, they don't have anyone. They don't have families, a lot of them. And how many a day are committing suicide? What is it now, 20-something a
it's
day?
It's 22.
A day.
I got a call here, Jeff, one morning, a Vietnam vet. He was a guy that was on the USS Wharton, guided missile destroyer, and a Russian MiG shot it up. And make a long story short, he got crushed, and he's all messed up, had many surgeries. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting on the toilet over at his house all alone mm-hmm. with a .22 rifle. And he had it in his mouth, and he was trying to get his toe in the trigger, and his legs were so swelled up, he couldn't get them in there. And he was crying. I went over there and took the gun away from him, and we got him up to the VA hospital in Denver, and he was there 4.5 months. He's really messed up, but he's leading a successful life. He's better now, and that's one guy we helped. But so many of them, Jeff, so many of these poor guys,
yeah.
And they live with the mental scars like I do. If you do survive and you're not too disabled, the mental scars are the things that haunt you in the empty moments. And
I can't imagine. I can intellectually try to understand, but the feeling, the pain, the emptiness, the darkness, the sorrow is just the average American could never dream of what it must be. And those people, I just wanted to say one thing. Those people are people who fought in World War II. They say in the title of that book, The Greatest Generation. I think there's a lot to that. Those people were special. Yes, they may have died in vain, some would say, but what they were made of was so extraordinary. I don't think that's existing much anymore.
No. And, you know, Jeff, I'll tell you, there's been times we were in the middle of it, and I knew I had to go do something, and somebody'd say, no, don't go out there, sir, don't. You know, they'll kill us. They're going to kill us all. And then someone would crawl over there and pick up a weapon and say, I'll go with you, sir.
Wow.
And that right there...
Wow.
That's heart of it. That's
it's still there. It's still there.
It's our country. That's the backbone of what made this. The cover of this book here, Jeff, it has a picture of the Constitution of the United States, but it's on fire. It's burning.
Mm-hmm.
It says, we the people. And superimposed over it, there is a man in black, full black SWAT gear with no markings, no flags. That's the shadow government. He's got an MP5 machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking his left hand and pushing down the blind lady of justice. She's in a white robe. He's ripped the robe off of her, her top, and she's got a white eye thing over her eyes. The scales of justice are knocked down. He's pushed her down. He's got the machine gun to her throat. And this picture with the Constitution on fire behind it, this is what this book, Choosing the Light, Dark Secrets of the Oklahoma City Bombing, it's a picture of what's happened here.
Yes.
Where the shadow
yes,
government
yes.
has forced and raped the rule of law that was set up by our Constitution. And this picture's worth a thousand words.
Who did the cover? Who did the art? That's an extraordinary image.
I don't remember.
This book, when will it be out, Cody? When can people just go online?
Here's what we're doing.
What do you think?
Yeah, we set up a everything with Amazon. It should be ready maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day, any day now. And it's going to be available. I think it's going to be like $9.99. And you go through Amazon, and then you just they send a PDF file. And that's the best way to... we had to file a copyright. Mm-hmm. We got all that done yesterday. We got the copyright and the attorney stuff and all this legal crap out of the way. So my goal is to get this truth. I suffered horribly. I saw a lot of things. I want the American people to stand with me in the light, to step forward. If I die, then I've died a good death because I'm standing up for the truth. I was a black ops. I was an asshole back then, but I changed. And there's hope. And we can do this if we work together. We can all stand up and put this fire out that's destroying our Constitution and restore this
country. We have to do
country.
It. We have to do it. We have no choice. We don't have any more time to talk.
No, it's... they're pushing hard, Jeff. The signs are everywhere.
Yes. No, they're making their final push. As soon as that book is ready, you need to please send me the cover and the link, and I will put it up on the homepage prominently.
Okay.
And I think this is one of the most important books of my lifetime, my adult lifetime. And it tells...
Oh, it's highly documented. It's 360, 380 pages. It's got so much information. But it's wonderful. I showed it to a guy on the USS Forrestal over the Mediterranean. He's a mm-hmm. Navy guy. He's done conspiracy research like you, Jeff, for 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. He read it. He goes, this is the best book I ever read. He said, this thing one day is going to be a blockbuster. And I said, I don't care about that. I care about our country. What good is having a blockbuster and a bunch of money if you can't spend it and you're in a slave state?
That's exactly right. I want to also tip my hat to your brothers who are outside right now protecting you, great Americans, one and all. This is something that just doesn't happen. I'm very honored to have been able to participate in this, and I would like to do as many more programs as you'd like to do whenever you'd like to do them. And this is, again, an audience that really cares. They understand, and they hear everything you say.
Well, we have the Barry Sadler assassination down there. I was in the middle of that. You know, he wrote the Ballad of Green Beret in 65, and that's
wow.
his number one song.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the truth about that. It's never been ever put out in public. It's in this book. And then I'll tell you the truth about Project Slammer from 84 and 85. It's a mind control program after the CIMK-Ultra thing. They morphed into these higher level directed energy where they're using microwaves to change the moods of people. I was directly involved in that.
And
I know so much.
Cody, this is really important. What year, what time frame are you talking about with the DEWs and mind influencing and mind control? Are you talking in the 80s here?
Project Slammer was begun in 1985. It was a 10-year study,
uh-huh.
and it was run by the NSA, the DIA, Navy and Air Force Intelligence, but the main ones running it were CIA and FBI Behavioral Science Division,
right.
and our some spies we had, like Alder Chains and Robert Hansen, had defected to the Soviets, so it was built, sent, mm-hmm. sold to Congress as an op to figure out why our spies were turning, mm-hmm. and then develop a profile test to stop it,
mm-hmm.
and then underneath that, the CIA turned it into an assassination program. So I was in the black op of that. This is amazing. The people need to really hear this. So
Jesus.
They won't fall victim to it.
Is there anything they don't weaponize?
No.
I didn't think so.
They've tried to weaponize everything. Psychic ability, science. That was in the Stargate program with Joe
yeah.
McMonagle.
Yeah. I know Joe McMonagle. He was a guest many times. I know Lynn, all of them. Paul, good friends, many times on the program. I had Ingo on a number of times. I hear
you.
Yeah,
this is the new stuff, this Project Slammer stuff. That's what killed me. I died in the hospital at the Soldier of Fortune show out there in Vegas. We took a 50 grand worth of machine guns to do a shoot out there, and they hit me with it out there. And, I died in the civilian doctors had no clue what they were seeing. And I'll explain the whole thing and how it works. It's amazing information. If I'm still alive to do it,
we'll do it.
Maybe we'll do a show on it. It's stuff you don't hear. They keep all this stuff covered
right.
up.
You people who have been listening, dear friends, the last two nights have heard things that have never been heard before. And if it weren't for Cody, we wouldn't know him. We'd go through the rest of our lives and we wouldn't know. Well, you heard about Benghazi tonight, what you've heard about Waco, what you've heard about especially the Murrah building, what you heard about 9/11 last night, and there's a lot more to that. You're hearing things that you're lucky. We're very blessed to be able to learn this much of the truth of what's going on around us, what's been done to us, and what is being done to us. Cody, thank you. I don't know how to begin to thank you, but thank you. I'm going to give you a call in a few minutes if you're home. I have something I want to ask you. And on behalf of everyone listening, bless you and thank you very much for your bravery. And again, tell your buddies outside that they are appreciated too. Thank you, Cody.
Thank you.
All right. Good night. Okay. We will be back with you tomorrow night. And I hope you do listen to the YouTube video of last night if you missed it, and listen to it again. This program will be up in video format tomorrow night. And this is a very rare opportunity to learn things that we otherwise would never have a chance to. Talk to you tomorrow.